Hello, this is World Business Report from the BBC World Service, where we bring you the latest in money, marketing, manufacturing, and yes, much, much more. Please review us, rate us, share us wherever you can. BBC podcasts are supported by advertising.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI4People.
World of Secrets, Season 4. Al Fayed, Predator at Harrods.
Cash, with that you can control people.
Nothing comes for free.
Listen now, wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Hello and welcome to World Business Report on the BBC World Service. Will Bain with you today. Great as always to have your company. A little bit different on the programme today because we're going to take an extended look at Google, the internet search giant. It's been told by the United States Department of Justice that it has to radically change its business model or it could potentially be face being broken up. We'll have a panel to talk through how likely that is, why it's under pressure from regulators, not just in the US, but around the world, and also what it might mean for other large technology companies. Have they simply got too large for regulators all around the world? We'll have a panel of experts, including people who know all the ins and outs of the legalities of this sector, people who've been inside the doors of big technology and those who invest in it as well. So if you've got any questions for our panel over the next half hour or anything you want to contribute to the programme, you can do so on our new, well, still relatively new WhatsApp number. That is +44 for the UK, 330 678 3033. So +44 330 678 3033. Or you can email us world.business@bbc.co.uk. Let's kick off with our senior technology reporter, Chris Vallance, who's been covering this story since it broke. Well, Chris, broke at a very strange time of day, apart from anything else, very late at night when the Department of Justice put this note out. What did they say?
Well, this all follows a case in August in which a US court found Google had illegally stifled competition in online search and related advertising. Now, the Department of Justice has set out some initial thoughts on how they might ask Judge Amit Mehta to deal with Google's anti-competitive behavior. Among the remedies, stopping deals that favor Google's products. For example, the billions it paid to device manufacturers and others to have Google as their default search engine. Also suggested structural remedies to stop Chrome, Google's browser, and Android, its mobile operating system, being used to steer people to its products. Perhaps that might mean splitting off these products from Google, hence all the talk of breaking things up. And they had other proposals around ad tech, AI, and how Google gathers and shares data. So if these are implemented, and there's a long road till that, potentially this could be, we could see a kind of groundbreaking set of actions taken against one of the biggest of the big tech firms.
Yeah, a big if, as you say, but interesting nonetheless, because it's the US now joining other regulators that I know you've reported on the program as well, who've been looking at those areas you were talking about in Google's business model.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen regulators really getting their teeth into some of the big tech firms. I mean, in Europe, the bloc's got this new competition law, the Digital Markets Act, and they've been taking all sorts of action and pressuring companies to act on the basis of those laws. I mean, this filing in the US came right after a US judge had ordered the firm to open up its Play Store to rival app stores. So again, you know, other US courts also taking action, and there's action continuing. And in the UK, we've had the Competitions and Markets Authority issue preliminary findings of anti-competitive behavior in ad tech, something that Google disputes. But a lot of action taking place against the big tech firms.
And in terms of a response from Google to this latest move by the Department of Justice?
Well, I think Google's general position, if I can sort of set it out like that, is that, you know, it has, what, 90% of US searches are processed by it. It's big, it argues, because its products are better. Consumers favour, like what it does, and that's why it's successful. In response to this particular proposal from the Department of Justice, in a blog post, Google's Vice President of Regulatory Affairs, Lee-Ann Mulholland, said the Department of Justice's initial proposals were radical and they were overreach, and set out, going through some of them a proposal by proposal, how they might, in the end, harm American consumers.
Yeah, and we're going to dig into that in a bit more detail as well, about what it might mean for all of us, any of us who use it all around the world too, Chris. Chris, you talked about the ifs that are still going on with this case. One of them is the time frame, right? Could be many years before we get to the end of this.
Yeah, I think a lot of experts are saying this is going to be a drawn out process. 5 years has been talked about. I mean, just with this initial phase, the Department of Justice has to sort of finalize what it wants to ask the judge to do. Google gets a chance to respond, come up with its own remedies. And then there has to be a decision by the judge. And of course, on top of all of that, Google is appealing the initial decision that put us in this, led to this situation. So, a long, drawn out, hopefully fascinating legal battle to follow.
Certainly the latter, I think, and why we're dedicating so much of the programme today. Chris, thanks so much for your time. Chris Vallance there, our senior technology reporter, with all the backdrop there, setting the table for you, if you like, of what we're going to talk about now. And we're going to try and answer, really, if we're talking about one question, there's obviously, as Chris says, a lot of question marks here for us to explore. But the one that we're going to try and get to is simply, is Google too big? Well, let's get a view, first of all, from the company itself, because in 2021, Sundar Pichai, the chief executive of Alphabet, that owns, of course, Google and YouTube, spoke to the BBC's Amol Rajan, and Amol started by asking him, well, exactly that.
You're facing this extraordinary suite of antitrust measures, which is an attempt to say Google is too big. In your view, can Google ever be too big?
Sometimes you need scale to do the kind of things which others can't do. You know, it's the big companies which can develop mRNA vaccines and so on in a short period of time. You know, and so there is clear value. At the same time, we need to make sure small companies can emerge and innovate. And I think that's equally important to society as well. Google invests in many startups. I think Googlers, we call them Zooglers, people who have left Google and gone out, I think I've started more than 2,000 companies in the last decade, and many of them are successful.
People worry that scale gives you disproportionate power. I mean, that's the basic issue. I mean, for people to understand, as we sit here today, I was looking up your market capitalization today. I think Alphabet's about $1.6 trillion. That would make you the 10th richest country in the world, on a parallel with South Korea, richer than Australia, richer than Spain, Mexico, Indonesia, the Netherlands, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Switzerland. I mean, never before in human history have a few companies had greater clout than whole nations. I mean, isn't that alarming?
I think we shouldn't confuse annual revenues versus gross domestic. I mean, I think about it differently. I feel we are accountable in every country to governments, to regulators, to society there, to our customers. I think about, are we innovating enough so that we are relevant 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now? And I know the work that goes into to earn that every year. We have to re-earn it. You know, I look at, and I think genuinely, I look at my kids, I look at the choices they have, I look at what they consume. We worry about being relevant.
Sundar Pichai, the chief executive of Alphabet, speaking to Amol Rajan back in 2021. Your text already coming in on this. Thank you for those, because you're asking, I think, the pertinent questions that I want to put to our panel already. Nakaka Innocent from Zambia been in touch, saying, looking at how we don't even search anymore, but just call it Googling, shows just how big this company's become. Breaking it down will just wear everyone down. Offering clear regulation only looks like a much better way. And another texter, anonymous, do please tell us your name and where you are in the world. It's great to get a flavour of where you're listening from. And it just gives us that perspective, doesn't it, as well, for everybody else listening. The big question, this texter says, though, is that I keep wondering about, is that breaking up Google and big tech may make sense for the domestic technology market, but how does the US balance this within its global competition against China, which, as he says, this texter says, is that the Financial Times reporting this week is confiscating passports of teachers, amongst others, in in sort of some moves around sort of culture war-y type issues, aren't they? Yeah, the US-China trade tensions, something we've talked about a lot on the programme. If you want to join those texters, as I say, +44 330 678 3033. Let's get to our panel, though. Anne Witt is with us. Anne's Professor of Antitrust Law and a member of the Augmented Law Institute at the EDEC Business School in Paris, France. Anne can hopefully help us, as you might have been able to guess there, with why so many people are looking to place restrictions on big tech companies. Michael Furtick is with us as well. Michael is a venture capitalist and the founder of Heroic Ventures. He's an investor in tech startups in particular right across the world. So hopefully get plenty of his views on what it might do to that investment area. Similarly, Russ Mould, regular, of course, with us on World Business Report, always here with us on a Wednesday to pick through what's in the financial markets. Russ from the UK investment platform AJ Bell. And in a short while, we'll try and get a view from inside one of these tech behemoths, from Bruce Daisley, another who helps us out on the programme fairly regularly. Bruce, of course, was the Vice President for Europe, the Middle East and Africa for Twitter before it became X. Thanks all for being with us. Russ, can I start with you? Because you're always good at these elements. A bit of history here, a bit of context. Have we seen a move like the move that the DOJ has made today before? And what were some of the outcomes?
Hello, Will. They're quite unusual, but a lot of this goes back to the Sherman Antitrust Act of 1890. There was a successful application of this in 1912 against the Terminal Railroad Association of St. Louis for blocking access to it. They broke up Standard Oil in 1911 into a load of different oil companies. AT&T was broken up into eight regional Bell regional telephone companies, and its telecom equipment business was split off in 1982. And there was a major effort to try and prosecute Microsoft using the same antitrust legislation in 1998. Microsoft initially lost that case for bundling Internet Explorer with Windows, appealed, and it was thrown out on a technicality in the year after, when Judge Jackson was found to have discussed the case with a journalist beforehand. So it was a very, very close call then for Microsoft. So these cases are quite rare, but when they happen, very high profile.
Michael Furtick, is that Microsoft one the one that we should perhaps focus on and have in our minds in the next 20 minutes or so on the programme as well, and the sort of outcomes or lack of outcomes from that?
Yes. Hi, it's Michael. I think that both Chris and Russ have made some sort of accidental misspeaking errors that I think we should correct. So Russ, I think, did point out the technical error that did lead to the circuit courts returning the case to the district court and then the tossing of the case. But the circuit court in the case against Microsoft did note that the Sherman Act was not really built for, as he points out from the 1890s, was not really built for software. It didn't know how to cognize or understand bundling. So it was more than a little bit of a flip, kind of distracting technicality. There was a ruling that is going to overshadow this case from Microsoft in the same way the kind of the way in which the case against IBM fell apart three or four decades ago. It took 4 decades to unfold and then finally fell apart because market conditions had changed. IBM was no longer the monopolist that DOJ had thought it was. And then Microsoft, of course, also became less of a monopolist. And there's reason to believe that in this case, by the time the kind of facts roll on, Google itself may be less of a monopolist. There is a ruling now from the district court, the trial court, it's what's called the district court in the United States. The trial court, Judge Amit Mehta, who was a self-described hip-hop connoisseur, your listeners may be interested in knowing, he did find that Google is a monopolist. And what's going on right now is an enforcement action from the DOJ. But Mr. Valance did, I think, also misspeak. He sort of conflated the action from a judge, the decision from a judge of a few months ago to force Google to open up its Play marketplace. That ruling came from a private action, a private cause of action that was brought by Epic Games, which is a user, a very big company. And so this case is different. This case against Microsoft, against Google, forgive me, is different because it's been brought by the government. It's been brought by the Department of Justice. In the United States, there are two agencies that bring antitrust cases. One is the FTC, the Fair Trade Commission. There's a person named Lena Khan, who's a very young and brilliant professor, who's running that now. And then the Department of Justice, which has the criminal power and also power to determine certain kind or prosecute certain kinds of cases. The FTC and the DOJ, either through statutory ruling or through agreement with each other, decide who prosecutes which set of cases. In this case, it's the DOJ. It's a much heavier hand. But they do have a history of fighting the last war, right? This case was filed in 2020, And already we're seeing reporting that the revenue of advertising from the search game is more competitive than it used to be. It doesn't mean that you should dismiss or despise the DOJ's action. There's reason to believe that Google should be subject to some regulation, but as a headline matter, there are a number of remedies that the DOJ is pursuing. The most extreme of these remedies is the super sexy breakup of Google kind of one. But there are so many others. A very simple one could be, for example, that Google might be forced, instead of having its sort of default position on your browser as the default browser from your Samsung machine or your Apple machine, you might be instead given an opportunity every time you log in, or every time you set up a new computer, or every time you log in for the 100th time, let's say, to choose a browser. So I think that there's a lot of waiting that we need to do before we know how this unfolds.
Absolutely. And hold that thought in a moment. I want to come to what impact that might have on other players, on us as well. But Professor Anne Witt, just try and give us a sense as to, I suppose, why now for all of these actions? And as Michael says, you know, lots of different things, everything from companies coming to regulators coming. Why this moment, do you think? Is there a sense as to why this moment?
Good question. Interesting question. So these are relatively young companies. Google was founded in 1998. And for the first 20 years of the digital platform economy, I think the US Antitrust Enforcement Agency sat back and watched, for good reason. I mean, you don't intervene in nascent markets while they're dynamic. I think the turning point came in 2019 when we saw the publication of several high-profile expert reports, including the UK Furman report, the US Stigler report, the EU's Vestager report, which all made the same findings. They said these initially very competitive markets have become extraordinarily concentrated. And we've got a handful of players that globally dominate these markets, something we haven't seen before. So the concern here is that these players' market power has become entrenched. And if we look at Google's market share for the past 15 years or so, it's been steadily at around 90%. That's quite extraordinary.
In search.
In search, yes. And it's protected by very high barriers to entry. So the need for scale, which was mentioned, the relevance of data, very significant network effects, the need to access capital, meaning that it makes it very difficult for a newcomer, even if it has the better product, to take on Google. Now, market power in itself is not illegal, right? As long as you obtain it because you have the best possible product. But what you may not do is protect this position of dominance or this monopoly through means that is not competition on the merits. And that's exactly what Google has been accused of.
And so, as a result, just to what Michael was saying then, is that what the regulators, plural, when it is regulators involved in doing this, are trying to do here? Open up options. It's not about Google per se, it's about options.
That's right. Big is not necessarily bad as long as there is a chance for competitors to push the incumbent off the pedestal if they have the better product.
And Russ, that has become a key policy area in Europe because why? A concern that companies outside of European governments' kind of control? Is it about that, being able to influence what they do?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to put words in Michael's mouth, but talking to my American friends, they will argue that one of the reasons that Europe hasn't got these companies is that as soon as they appear, they try and regulate them to pieces. So they will argue that actually Europe's going about it the wrong way and should be doing much more to innovate and less to regulate. But Europe is clearly, I think it's not so much concern over the domicile as the dominance and whether it is possible for companies, be they European or American or from wherever, to challenge these very, very strong incumbent positions that have, by rights, been actually quite hard earned.
You're listening to World Business Report, by the way, on the BBC World Service, and our special looking at Google and this action today by the Department of Justice in the United States. Michael, take us to the market connotations then for all of this. Immediately and then in the sort of medium long term, what are they? Are there any?
Yeah, of course there are. Look, Google's very easy to use. They make their products pleasurably interoperable. maybe the king of this pleasure of interoperability is Apple. But of course, these things come with frustrations. Probably many of your listeners will have, maybe you will have purchased Apple products and new generations of Apple products and found yourself very frustrated that the charger that you bought, you know, 25 minutes ago for the last product does not work for this new one. And why the heck should it? So you start collecting all these old chargers and accessories in the European Union, which seems to, you know, consider itself the kind of the regulator of health and peace for the planet, has put forth some rules that will compel Apple and its cohort, its peers, to use backwards compatible charging devices and accessories and so forth and so on. So there's an analogy there. It's very easy to visualize of what could unfold here. You could imagine that the regulators could compel some backwards or at least open compatibility for Google. You can make your data portable. You can bring your business elsewhere. You can decouple the browser from the marketplace. You can decouple search from the advertising marketplace and so forth and so on, so as to make the on-ramps to the value of the customers much more accessible by challenger companies and startups. Look, I think that the mission, which I would agree, is that you have to keep the blood flowing through the veins of the internet and through innovation. You have to prevent sclerosis. You have to make sure that coagulation does not block up innovation and so forth. But I feel invited by our friend Russ, whom I've just met. Hello, Russ. To speak as an American on this panel. Hello. You know, I do lament Europe's sort of approach to commerce, right? There, you have a continent of 500 million people who are highly educated and very creative in many fields. And instead of spending time sort of facilitating innovation and decriminalizing entrepreneurship and decriminalizing risk and making it possible for someone who was once on a board of a company that once went bankrupt to work again in life and not suffer moral and civil and criminal opprobrium for the rest of his or her life, Europe instead says, you know, let's regulate companies to death. And the six companies that were nominated by Europe about a year ago by the EU to be so-called gatekeepers of digital life, which included Alphabet, Google, there were five of them were American. One was Chinese. You know, what are you going to do? Right? So right now it's a continent of 500 million people without a single new idea. And they're very, very good at throwing rocks. I will say in this case, I do believe that we should take seriously the allegation that Google is accidentally or on purpose engaging in behavior that is anti-competitive, right? When you spend billions of dollars, right? So that we know already what the public defense of Google by Google will be, right? We've heard from Ken Walker. We've heard from the other gang. We know now that they will say, we are number one. We have always been 90%. We've always been number one. Yeah. We will continue to be number one because we are just qualitatively better. We know that's their argument. But if that were true, if that were the only reason that they were 90%, why are they spending billions, that's billions with a B, on default contracts and exclusivity contracts and priority contracts with counterparties like Samsung and Apple? That's the question. So I think we do have to understand that it is a reasonable case to believe they're anti-competitive. I happen to believe that this DOJ, this FTC, are leaning a little harder on anti-competitive ideas, not just in this case, but in others, than prior generations of the FTC and DOJ. And I'm not super happy about it as an American, but I also believe in this case, you know, you can't dismiss it. They've got something to say. Yeah. We have to pay attention.
Well, let's bring in Bruce Daly on a couple of bits of that as well. Bruce, as I was saying, former vice president for Europe and the Middle East and Africa of Twitter before it came X as well. Bruce, thanks for being with us on the programme.
I don't know what the last bloke was going on about the EU. I don't see the relevance to that here. But obviously, this is a huge story, specifically with regards to the US and Google.
Yeah, we'll take that forward and I'll explain perhaps why we were talking European as well in a moment, because we were just broadening it out a little bit to other kind of actions too as well. But in terms of your take on what it's meant, what it means, I suppose, to Google, full stop, and as someone who's been inside a big tech company in terms of investment confidence, that kind of stuff as well.
I think Google are presented with an immediate choice here. Microsoft spent the last years of the Gates era and the majority of the Steve Ballmer era fighting their own antitrust regulation. And they took their eye off the ball. The advent of social media came along, mobile phones came along, tablets came along, and Microsoft were really sort of flat-footed. And Google are going to be presented with the same choice here. I think the reign of Sundar Pichai has been disappointing. I think most people feel that the stock has underperformed. There's a portfolio of assets that really sits without its value being exploited. And I think what was laid out in the DOJ assessment yesterday was very clear that this isn't just going to be a breakup. This is going to be a dismemberment. Sharing the data on various aspects would be something that effectively really undermines their business model. I suspect the best thing they can do now is go through the stages of grief quickly and decide that this is a negotiation they want to have and try and keep some of the parts intact. Sell off YouTube. Sell off some of the display business, see if they can keep some of the search strength there and maybe sort of try and put themselves in a better position. But they've got a choice, and probably the worst thing for an underperforming stock like Google to do right now is to say, let's go to the barricades and let's fight this one out. The best thing they could do is negotiate.
And what about a choice for consumers? What about the competition? What does it mean for them?
Just on this one question.
Yeah, quickly, Michael.
The stock has tripled since Sundar became the CEO. It's tripled, 300%. And that's a performance of tripling that is superior to any 5-year period, I believe, in the last. Yeah, the previous 5-year period was not a tripling. I think that's not true.
You work at Google. People, the Apple stock has significantly performed above that. There's other stocks in the marketplace. I think most people would say that the value of Google does not represent, the stock value of Google does not represent the value of the assets. And businesses like YouTube would be worth substantially more if they were floated off.
Let's just move from the stock. Anne, I just want to get you in on this, on that final point. I mean, is this where this ends, or do you think more action comes towards more of the other big tech firms as well from other regulators?
Well, there are plenty of other actions, lawsuits pending in the United States alone. So as was mentioned before, the FTC and the DOJ divided up the task of looking into the big tech, into the big four. So there's another Google case currently pending. The ad tech case, the DOJ has taken on Apple. Yeah. The FTC is suing Meta. The FTC is suing Amazon.
All ones that I think we'll come back to, and we'll try and get all you guys back on again as well. We could have done an hour, couldn't we? Thanks for listening.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI4People.
He owned iconic luxury brands.
Harrods was the ultimate glamorous shop.
The most famous people in the world coming there.
But Mohammed Al-Fayed used his wealth and power to control more than just his business interests.
Mohammed Al-Fayed was like an apex predator.
World of Secrets, Season 4. Al-Fayed, Predator at Harrods, from the BBC. Search for World of Secrets wherever you get your BBC podcasts.